CliffCentral.com.
All right, Pumi has started her morning with a little selfie, which is always a great way to go.
Back in the stew.
Shame, I believe, Pums, I believe they have not been very hospitable to you there in the studio. It seems like maybe Simpiwe is trying to sabotage you on purpose. Do you want to explain what's happened?
I think this is what happens when you don't have people around you for 2 years, right? You actually stop knowing how to behave like a normal person. Right now, she's standing over there, like pouting like a little child. Uh-huh. I came in the studio this morning. It was 17 degrees in here. Like, what the hell? 17 degrees for what?
Oh, now it's gone dark as well. Great.
Oh, now beautiful. She's turning off the lights. I mean, the whole thing is just insane. Do you know that there's no real coffee here? Like, there is no real coffee here at the station.
Yeah, I was at the office on Tuesday, and I know that for a fact. I'm coming in today again.
Where's the coffee machine? Like, what's going on, guys?
We slashed... We slashed things back when lockdown hit, and
that we don't have to welcome visitors.
Yeah.
So now we know the coffee was actually for the visitors. It was never for us.
It was never for us.
We were just like, we were just, it's like, you know, when your parents have the nice cups.
Yes.
And the nice plates.
Yes.
And the baker's choice assorted biscuits.
Yes.
Those are not for you. But when the visitors come,
then suddenly
you also get.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly how it works with us. Definitely. No, that's 100% right.
So the coffee is like that. It was so getting the coffee was actually just a byproduct of the fact that I see this.
And then she made the studio as cold as possible for you as well. That was another complaint. And you said when she set up the camera for this morning's show, she made sure that it looked right up your nose.
It was quite a thing. Like, up my nose, y'all.
That's so great.
I do want you to know. So I was in KZN this week. I drove back home. I arrived last night at 10. Yesterday we were in Pietermaritzburg, but the day before we were in Ngqutu.
Ngqutu, which is near
It's not near anything.
No, but it's like in the middle of rural northern KwaZulu-Natal. It's like between Nongoma and Nkandla and
It's actually between Ladysmith, Mnambithi, and Ulundi. So if you come through Ladysmith on your way to Ulundi, but
Ngqutu
is in the middle of nowhere.
In that part of KZN, don't you still need the king's permission to drive your car there? Like, if you get caught without his permission, don't they chase you out with an e-car?
No, but this, so Gareth, you're going to love this. In that area that we were in, there are two things that I want to tell you about that you've probably never heard of. One is that there is actually a very large population of Basotho speaking people, and their chief is a Mosotho.
Oh,
Molefe.
Uh huh.
And so this whole area, a big chunk of Ngqutu, they are actually first language Basotho speakers.
Wow.
Mutaungs.
How long have they been? In that area? Because that's quite unusual.
For many, many years, I think from the time of King Shaka already. So they have been there a long time, and they have kept all their traditions. So they have not been swallowed up by the Zulu people around them. They are Mutaungs, Molefe, obviously. So they are Batlokwa, the people in that area. And at this time of the year, as you may know, most Basotho and Ndebele boys go into the mountain for initiation ceremonies.
Correct. Yes.
So the Zulu people do not. do mountain initiation ceremonies. It was stopped in the time of King Shaka because he thought that it took time away for the young men that he needed in his regiment.
Correct.
So he said, we're stopping this thing. I have another way to help you become men.
Yeah, let's kill. Yeah,
exactly. Go out and fight.
Exactly.
and those boys are currently out in the mountains, so they've kept all of their rituals. They have kept their language. So when they are in that area,
they choose to send them up at the coldest time of year. Hey, whew, into the mountains, God
well,
Almighty!
Well, it's the time to go.
I know, but
it's the time to go because you are less likely to get infections that way.
Because it's freezing,
which is unfortunately what happens in the Eastern Cape in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Is a lot of people get infections and die.
Yes, Shaka had foresight. He was a visionary.
And then the second thing I want to tell you about in Ngqutu is years ago, and I remember this when I was younger, there was a very, very famous, the English word is terrible because the English word is witch doctor, but it's not really a witch doctor. But
I know what you mean.
Right? A very famous one who was, everybody knew about him, and his name is Sosobala. And
Have
heard this.
That rings a bell, but tell me who this person was.
He used to own a plane, right?
Yes.
Right.
Uh-huh. Like those charismatic
traditional
pastors.
Healer. Yeah. Thank you, Rebellious Ruth. Mm-hmm. Traditional healer.
Mm-hmm.
And we drove around with Undunankulu in the area. So there's Molefe is the chief, and there are 19 Indunas under him.
Right.
And, you know, in the hierarchy, right? So Induna is like middle management.
Yeah.
The executive management is Undunankulu. And we drove around, and he was showing us around. And he showed us Sosobala's house, which is still standing all these many years later after his death. And it's like a triple story. It's huge.
Yeah.
It's not even a double story. It's like three stories high. And he told us that his whole thing that Sosobala used to tell them is it must be seen how powerful he is. And what he actually wants, and the Zulu phrase for it, is he wants to urinate on the heads of his neighbors. That's why he must be so far.
That's right. Sosobala Mbata.
Mbata.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he was well known. I remember his whole story. Yes, man. That three-story house. I've even got a picture of it for you. Hang on. This is quite cool. Yeah. No, this is real. This is the real thing. Sosobala. He lived in this massive house. And didn't he have, like, they found all these... they found a safe full of money and gold and stuff when
full
he died.
He wasn't Western educated.
No.
So he was, by all intents, he was illiterate.
Yeah.
And here he was, private jet, out in the 80s. Apparently that house now, his daughter, who is still alive, is renting out to a whole lot of Chinese people who have shops in the...
Yeah, Sosobala, they found all that money in his safe. I remember that. That was a big story. And the plane. I remember the story about the plane. He had his own, like, DC plane.
So that's become like a... A compound for all the Chinese people that own shops in the nearby mall.
That's right.
These are the adventures of Pumi Mashego in KZN.
Pums, that sounds amazing. You see, that's the kind of stuff I would love to do, like a road trip around. No, seriously, I've told you before, and I said to Muzi Kuzwayo the last time we had him in the studio, I was like, please, I want to do a trip through KwaZulu-Natal with Muzi, because he knows the history as well as I do, if not better. And he can introduce me to all of these amazing people who have the oral tradition, you know, who are able to tell the stories. And of course, with the benefit of taking you along is you can actually understand this, the high ancient Zulu that they speak in some of these places. So we'll be able to figure out what's going on.
So we were, but I will brag about this a little bit. We were, we also stopped by in Clones, which is a little village outside Dundee, yeah, where we've got a project putting up water, a water pump and tanks for the yes community. And that is progressing relatively well. So within a month or so, there's going to be clean running water, oh, wow, for a village of about 2,000 people.
Well, you see, when people say, "Ah, the Burning Platform is just a talk shop," and you know, you say every week
we do cool things.
It's up to us. We've got to stand up and be counted. We've got to do it for ourselves. We're the leaders we've been waiting for. And you know, a lot of people will cynically say, "Oh, yeah, yeah, that's all. Pumi's just saying the right thing." But you're actually out there doing this, and that's part of your business. It's part of what you and Muzi are doing at the moment, which I think is so great.
It is very cool. And we were offline, obviously, because there's not great reception in those deep rural parts. And so yesterday when I got back to Joburg and turned on my Twitter,
yes,
blowing up with Ian Cameron.
Wow, did you see that?
Who is this hero without a cape?
But we love this guy because he just stood up to Becky Kele. Let's just, do you want to save it for the Burning Platform or do you want to do it now? Because
okay, let's save it for
I mean, I'll get the video and make sure that we can watch it from beginning to end. Because I also only saw little bits and pieces. This guy basically stood up at a meeting in the Western Cape and accused the police minister, quite rightly, of ignoring the Western Cape's plight on purpose because he doesn't care about gangsterism. He doesn't care about drugs and crime and murder in the Western Cape. He wants it to be as bad as possible because the national government and the National Police Commissioner have no interest in maintaining law and order in the Western Cape. They don't want to devolve it upon the provinces. That would mean they would be giving up some of their own power. And this guy, basically this dude, ordinary member of the community, I think he represents some small party or action group.
The CPF.
Yeah, and you know what? Those are the groups that will make a difference. I mean, we've got a local neighborhood like WhatsApp group, which I sometimes hate being on because, you know, there are lots of people who just talk shit.
WhatsApp.
Yeah, but I think about it and I think, well, that is because people use the word community. And this is something I spoke about with Ben last Friday. People use that word community way too much and they use it for all the wrong reasons. They're like, we are the community. We, you know, community needs this. The community desires and demands this. The community represented by those words often are misplaced. But the real community is when you belong to a group of people and you all actively participate in things that happen within that community, the good things, the bad things. Mm-hmm. You stand up for yourselves. Mm-hmm. You represent yourselves as a group. Before the people who are meant to take care of basic infrastructure, service delivery needs, all of that stuff. It doesn't happen very often, but I like the fact that all over South Africa, people are making these little connections and they're getting things done. And they're not tolerating crap from the politicians like they used to, because we were a very cowed society. I think you'd agree with me, Pumi. Whether you were black or white, English or Afrikaans or Zulu or Tswana or Sotho or whatever, we used to be very obedient people in this country. We used to be people who would do what we were told. We would.
I don't think we were brutalized.
Yeah, that's probably true too. But I think there was a certain amount of like craven kind of respect for authority, and it was inculcated into us as young children. It still is in many places. You know, you must respect your elders. If someone is an office bearer of some kind, just by virtue of the fact that they bear that office, they must have your respect and you shouldn't argue with them and you certainly shouldn't mock and ridicule them. I think that's mostly disappearing now. And I think it's a good thing because too many people have lorded it over us for generations based on the fact that we must just automatically respect them. You know, those old NP guys with the hats on, then the ANC guys with their fingers in the till, and everybody in between, the people who were, you know, in the army or the air force or the navy, or they were telling us what to do in the streets with police uniforms on. Those people must must back down now. The ordinary citizens are standing up, and they won't take this anymore.
So another thing that I was a part of, which is a very fascinating conversation, dialogue. I think that's what they're calling it. It's convened by Professor Nick Bernardell.
Oh, yes.
You know, he started GIMS.
Yes.
And he had one about 3 weeks ago, about a month ago. He had the first one, which to which he invited Lord Peter Hain. We had him on the show on the Burning Platform as well, which was an incredible group of people, older people with lots of diverse experience in both in private sector, in public sector, in academia, a really fantastic group of people. And he had the second one. Oh, an embarrassing thing happened to me. So it was a Zoom meeting.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure how I ended up being invited to this thing. And I got on the Zoom. I was at the office and I turned on my Zoom and I was still busy doing stuff and I was a little bit early. Mm-hmm. And I left the boardroom, which is where I was going to be for the session. I left the boardroom and everybody kept coming into the room as I went to make coffee, because we actually have coffee at our office.
Yes.
And when I came back into the room.
I heard that subtle dig, but okay. Yeah.
When I came back into the room, all of the various people on screen were coming on. And I looked over, and as I was closing the door, and I looked over, and there were all these old white guys.
Oh, wow. What?
And I thought my screen was off and I thought my thing was on mute. And I don't know why, but out loud, I was just like, oh my goodness, so many old white guys.
So what did they say?
I was horrified. So Nick says, who is that?
Oh boy.
And I turned on my camera and I said to Nick, hi, I'm Pumi. You may not remember me. You must always reintroduce yourself
to
old people.
Of course, yeah.
It's always the duty of the young to remind the old people who they are. So I reintroduce myself to Nick and I say to him, but listen, guys, I'm horrified that we have this forum here and there's no diversity. We're all gonna, you know, it's you and your friends. What are what conversation are you going to have that you haven't had in the past 20 years if it's only you guys? We need other voices and we need different people in the platform so we can hear other people's experiences and ideas, because that's really what we need. If we're going to change things in this country, if we're going to change ourselves, we need different perspectives.
Right.
He took that. He was gracious and he took that. He was like, yeah, he gets it. We were going to invite more. He was going to invite a more diverse crowd. It was horrendous. I was the only black woman.
Yeah, you know, I think there's so much window dressing.
Michelle Faster.
There's so much.
Michael says,
Michael,
if it was reversed, would it be racist? I absolutely don't think so. For the same reason that I think if we're going to change things, we need to hear different perspectives. We need to hear young voices. We need to hear old voices. We need to hear men and women and blacks and whites. We need to, and Indians and coloreds and Chinese and everybody, because the perspectives are important in order to move forward. If we only have a single conversation amongst ourselves, then we don't see anything different and we don't see how we can change what we're doing.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, this idea, and I totally agree with you, that we will miss out on perspectives. We aren't, when you don't have a representative crowd, you don't have everyone's buy-in. And all of that's massively important. But I do think that this idea of diversity and inclusion, those two words, it's become like a religion, especially in corporate South Africa and all over the world, in fact, because people are so interested in representation rather than actually having a good reason for some people to be there and other reasons for people to be there that are not good reasons. And we can debate that. But, you know, there's huge amounts of window dressing that still goes on in corporate South Africa. We all know.
Absolutely.
We all know that in order to tick those boxes that you just alerted those men to, there are also people who will bend over backwards to just have black women all over the place, even though they don't allow those black women to make any decisions. They really are just there as window dressing. They don't make a meaningful contribution. And it's just bullshit. It feels so fake. And I think we've got to a point now where a lot of this stuff rings hollow, even though there isn't there's an enormous amount
of progress. If you manipulate the situation, Garrett.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a difference between genuinely wanting to hear different people and different things, right? And then there is also wanting to tick boxes and keep everything the same. Mm. Therefore, the people you invite into the space are people you can manipulate or people you know will not contribute. So those two things, and again, you know, the intentions of people are always, self-serving in a lot of ways. But a fascinating thing I saw and heard from Professor Marwala, actually, who's at UJ, mm-hmm. about diversity. And he is, if you don't know who he is the the head of UJ, and he is one of the top specialists in AI development, not just in South Africa or Africa, but the world.
I think I've spoken to him on the show.
And he talks about computer human systems, obviously because of AI, right? Mm. Because artificial intelligence is trained by humans.
Right.
And it was in a paper, I think in MIT, that the most diverse systems that include computers and humans and different types of humans are the most adept at innovating and coming up with new things, right? Why you need, because computers on their own, a system with computers on its own, then only has the biases of the people that program it. But if you have computers programmed by various people, different fields, so not just different, diversity is also not just about race and gender. Diversity is also about industry sectors, right? So you have artists, designers, engineers, but all that is diversity. So lots of different types of people from different areas with different perspectives. You're able to then design computer systems that are far more innovative and can generate different ideas.
No, but you have to be able to prove that, because diversity just for its own sake doesn't necessarily make anything better. We've seen this too. You know, a lot of people go, oh, we need diversity and inclusion. And then what you do is you just end up filling the room with a whole bunch of people who actually are like-minded without being diverse. You know, diversity, what we really need is diversity of thought, not just of appearance. You know, there are a lot of people, again, who tick these boxes. And every fucking company in South Africa is falling over themselves to show how inclusive and how diverse they are. And I say, so what? If it isn't actually contributing to your business.
And then if you have 10 accountants, you're not diverse.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, I'm not that interested in diversity for diversity's sake. I think it has to result in different perspectives, like you mentioned, Pumi. It has to result in a way of seeing the world from different points of view so you don't miss anything. And that's where it does have value. And I think companies that don't have a good spread of people from all corners of at least this country and perhaps the globe are missing out, because they will not see the marketing opportunities. They will not understand the way of thinking of different people from different places and different backgrounds. But for its own sake, just so that you can show United Colors of Benetton picture on your board pack, I think that's ridiculous, and I think we've all seen through that. And in South Africa at this stage, there are way too many people who are still doing it. They're like, diversity and inclusion, and then when you see what's actually happening, still three people who are making all the decisions. The rest are all just sitting there being paid to attend the biannual board meeting. And you know they're not doing anything. There's the one white guy, black guy, or Indian woman who's like making all the calls, and then the rest of them are just sitting there like lummoxes, and it's embarrassing. And For those people to allow themselves to be used like that is embarrassing, first of all. For the company to be doing it and thinking they can get away with it is outrageous. And I think that this whole, it's become almost like a religious dogma. You know how you have sacraments in religions? You have, you know,
yes.
Holy Communion, and if you're a Catholic, you have to attend Mass, and there are certain high and holy days, and all of that stuff. Well, diversity inclusion has become like a religion in corporate South Africa. People go through these rituals, amen, you know, and they bow in front of the altar of this, and they tick the boxes, and they have their HR department go through all the processes, and then they sit in their board and they kind of look around and they go, oh, well, you know, what we really need is more black women, because then we'll be able to get more government tenders. But they're not doing it because they actually want black women there. And I just feel like...
And that's... So this is the thing that I'm saying, that diversity is not just about... It's about truly wanting to hear different perspectives. So yeah. You speak about board meetings, for instance. One of the things that I have seen in corporate South Africa is exactly that. We want to get more Chinese, Indian, colored, black people, yeah, right. All of that in our board meeting, in our boardroom and on our board. But what they end up having is 10 accountants who just have different colored skin. That is not diversity.
Or they have like five.
Or 10 politicians.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, the thing we have in this country.
That is not diversity.
We end up with like 10 people who used to be in the ANC but have been thrown out of ANC structures and now are looking for a way to influence things from the outside. You know, these companies are still hoping to curry favor with the government. And then they'll hire these old ANC cadres who all think the same way, who none of them, I mean, they're. You and I could walk diversity circles around these people with our eyes closed, because we would know different opinions if we saw them. These guys all have exactly the same old, like 1970s Russian Stalinist take on how the country should be governed and how business works. They don't add any value in those boards. They're a waste of time. Absolute waste
of time. I'd love to see more creative people in boards. I'd love to see more.
That is such a good point, because Pumi, you and I both,
designers and marketers,
we both work and have worked in various creative industries, and you're right about this accountant thing. That drives me crazy, because the minute you bring the accountants in and listen,
all they do is count.
We need accountants, but they have no capacity. Very few of them, let me be fair, because there are accountants who are creative, and I don't mean in a tax dodging way. I mean, there are accountants who think differently to the way that that it's just about making the books balance. There are accountants who think about putting money aside to do really amazing and interesting things, to do research and development, to do stuff that builds people, to really change the way companies work. And then there are accountants who just streamline, cut expenses. They come in like
those
strippers.
Those accountants are going to be replaced by AI.
Well, yes, and I think a lot of this diversity and inclusion shit will be replaced by AI too. Because even though what you said is true, that the human factor is important, so much of what humans think is diverse and interesting is actually just them unloading their psychological bullshit into places where it doesn't belong. And I think machines will ultimately help us do less of that me, pay attention to me, I also want some attention, I also want to be important kind of nonsense that humans are always prone to. So, I mean, we're getting there. But I do feel like South Africa has, although we've become in so many ways open, more authentic, more real, we've stopped just listening to authority, as I said at the beginning of this little diatribe. But there's a huge corporate religion of diversity and inclusion that has metastasized like a cancer, and it does no good. These companies are so busy squaring the circle and jumping through hoops to try and be as diverse and inclusionary as they possibly can that they have forgotten the business that they're in, making sandwiches or fixing walls. Now it's become all about how you appear rather than what you do. And I don't think that we're a country that can afford that anymore. There are hungry, desperate, unemployed people. Some of them are very talented people. They maybe never got given the opportunity to excel in any particular area. Maybe they've been sidelined. But we keep talking diversity and inclusion, what we really have done in this country, we've enriched at no cost to themselves a cadre, a cohort of politically connected people whose loyalty isn't necessarily to productivity, to for-profit organizations, to making a difference in the country, to creating value. Their loyalty is to politics, and this cohort of people have become immensely rich and powerful. We know who they are. Our president is one of them. They've become immensely rich and powerful at the expense of actual growth and development and productivity and profitability and a country moving in a forward direction rather than a backward one. We know who these people are. And they all go around saying, oh, I'm on the board. It's diversity and inclusion. It isn't. You and your friends in politics have ruined business in this country. And the old white companies that did this, that allowed this to happen, that didn't just allow it, that encouraged this to happen and took advantage of the situation and got their black, and got their black representative in and just gave them money to just sit there. You know, instead of actually growing someone from the ground up and finding real talent and helping young black people to forge a path for themselves, those people are much to
Gareth,
blame.
All that hard work. Yeah, all that hard work you're expecting people to do.
I'm sick of it because I see such talent and possibility and opportunity in this country. And I see so many people who have unreal abilities, but no one's ever taken the trouble because it's much easier to just hire Tokyo or Cyril or someone else onto your board, pay them a shit ton of money like they've been paid by 25 other companies, and they sit there and they and they chuckle and they glad hand, and everybody gets paid a dividend, and nobody grows the average young, talented black entrepreneur. Nobody puts any effort into them. They can't get funding. They can't get a leg up. It's big supplies from big companies instead of small suppliers in small places. We're never going to grow.
It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of hard work on both sides. It's a lot of hard work on the person that is extending themselves to assist and get not just young people, but different types of people to grow in whatever industry sector they're in. It is a lot of hard work on the side of the person who is receiving all of this attention and help and...
and sometimes it's too much effort.
It's on both sides.
No. Well,
on both sides of the scale. It is a lot of hard work.
Here's a good point made by DK. South Africa is full of oligarchs. Remember those exiled were trained by the championship country of oligarchs. Yeah, that's correct. And they were especially paying attention during the Boris Yeltsin administration when Russia was fleeced just like South Africa has been fleeced. They all come from the same university of corruption. Let's not forget that. Congo Chris says, the diversity legislation created the infrastructure for that corruption and nepotism, Gareth. You know it, I know it, and Pumi knows it. No amount of blaming old white dudes will fix that. Yeah, but they played a role. And we're not just blaming them so we can pass the buck. Because it's our problem now. A lot of those guys are dead. You know, a lot of those companies that said, what we'll do is we'll just give X amount of the company away. And then we can get into government's pockets.
And you know, and we started out the show talking about Lord Peter Hain. This has always been the thing, you know, is all of those consultants that came here from McKinsey and Bain and with all of these grand plans of how this could work, are also part of the what's gone wrong. And I think it's important to know what's gone wrong so that we can figure out how not to do that again. It's important.
Yeah.
Looking back and thinking wrong.
We've got to a point, though, in this country where actually I don't give two shits about diversity inclusion as long as someone can make things work, and especially in places like Eskom. Now, I don't know that this Andre de Rater is impressive. Someone tried to defend him to me the other day. I'm not that impressed with him.
Gareth.
If you could find a colored woman in a wheelchair who can do a better job than him, and I wouldn't be surprised if any colored woman in a wheelchair could, then put her in, because I'm not interested in whether Andre de Rater is white or male. It doesn't bother me in the least. I want someone who, when I switch on the fucking lights, they come on. I don't give two damns about the politics of Eskom. In fact, the politics of Eskom is what has got us to this situation. and an obsession with not only...
Gareth, I love it when you come back full circle. Mm. I remember saying to you guys, Andre De Reiter fucked up NAMPAC.
Yes, yes. And how did he get in? Because he's politically connected. He's in that same cohort of people who just moves around corporate South Africa, never ever being held accountable for their fuck ups. I'm sorry, I'm totally with you.
I love it. I remember having this conversation. In fact, I think I was exactly here in the studio mm-hmm. with you and Camden. I said, that man fucked up. He fucked up and where he's been. If just looking at his corporate history.
I have not.
I don't know if he's going to be the person to turn this thing around.
I didn't disagree with you about him. I didn't disagree with you about Cyril. And there are so many of these useless, parasitic people who are hanging around on the infrastructure of this country and sucking it dry. And I'm sorry, I'm done with it now. Find me someone who's prepared to put in the work. Find me someone who's not beholden to politicians. And put that person in charge of Eskom. And I think we will make more progress. Find someone who is willing to go around to power stations and arrest, on the ground, arrest people who are getting in the way of the ordinary South African getting the basic dignity. We talk about human rights and dignity. The basic dignity of having water and electricity to wash, to cook. That's what we need. Forget about this. The Bill of Human Rights at the front of our constitution. If you're not going to provide people with water and electricity, what is the point of a government if you can't do that stuff? Seriously, it's enough already. Anyway, no one will excel under the ANC government. Well, listen, I think they are in for a major hiding at the next election. And I've never seen so much anger. We talk about like how angry we are on the show and, oh, we didn't get our lights this week or we couldn't make our meal last night until 10 o'clock, which was the case for me. But so what? Those are not the biggest problems in the world. Ordinary people at the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum in this country who are desperate. Those people, let me tell you, are so angry at the moment. They have nothing to lose. You got to watch out if you're a politician. Things are going to get very ugly. I saw Ekurhuleni yesterday. There were protests all over Ekurhuleni. People are like, we've had it up to here. There were service delivery protests. I saw the people of Makobo were up in arms because their mayor went to the Durban July and spent 700,000 on booze and women and parties. Now, I wouldn't be sleeping so easy if I were the mayor of Makondo at the moment, because I'll tell you what, the people of that town are gutful, and they're going to pull him out of his house if he's not careful and drag him down the street.
Guys, really? Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Go to the Durban July. Spent 700,000 rand on booze. Congo Chris says, and fuck Becky Pele and his stupid clown hat. Yeah, that too. We'll play that clip just now. That guy, you see how insecure these guys are, hey? Becky Pele, he's the one who's been going around like a big taxi bus saying to everybody, we will shoot to kill. You remember all that stuff. We know how to run this country. The police have got things under control. You must go to, remember during the lockdown when he said, you must be in bed by 9 o'clock talking to us like children. Well, it took one guy at a community policing forum meeting to rattle Becky Taylor to the point where he was stumbling, stuttering, falling down, trying his best, calling up the race car, doing whatever he could, and none of it worked. The people at that meeting were not interested in him.
Remember about 3 weeks ago, there was a march by Soweto residents to the city of Joburg offices in Bromfontein to see Mpho Phalatse. Mm. And pardon me, there was a very funny video of a guy who, one of the Vox Pops that on, I think it was on Newsroom Africa. And they spoke to one of the people who was marching to say, oh, so where are you from? And he was from Pimville. Mm. And probably about 2 weeks prior to that, Begicele had come to Pimville because one of the Dudula people had been shot and killed. And it had become a bit of a keg over there. And so they asked this guy, so what happened after the minister came and what's happened now? That guy... I wish I could find the video for you, and hopefully I'll try and find it and tweet it a little bit later.
Okay.
But this guy just, you could see his face change, as the interviewer said. So the minister was there. What has since happened in the community? This guy says, "Who? Bekicele? Bekicele the liar? Bekicele the liar?"
Oh, man. Yeah.
Bekicele the liar, he says. That video was so perfect. And I think it was just, you know, it's just been rolling downhill for Bekicele since then, you know, because he's and it shows, you know, they're under a lot of pressure. When you see these kind of outbursts, it's the pressure has gotten to them. The pressure has mounted and has gotten to them, and they're unable to hold it together.
That's it. They're falling apart under the pressure, which is great, because it's about time that they realize that they are shit at everything they do. They're just absolutely useless at everything they do, and nobody's going to take them seriously anymore. Not as politicians, not as... We wouldn't hire... Listen, would you give a job, Pumi, to any single one of those cabinet ministers in your own business? I very much doubt it. I very much doubt any of Cyril's cabinet would be any good at helping your business to go in any direction but down. And
we do actual work at our company.
Correct. And I do remember a time when we had competent ministers in this country. We did have people, and we were reminiscing on the show just a couple of days ago about the Thabo Mbeki era, where we had growth of 6%. You remember? I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot, but my God, what we wouldn't do for that right now. Where we had a surplus, a budget surplus, where we were actually respected by the international community. We had people... We used to have a Department of International Relations that actually would speak sometimes, and people would sometimes listen. Not now. Mm. Right? Mm. We had some clout.
Yeah.
We've had nothing but damage to our reputation since, I don't know, probably the end of the World Cup in 2010. Nothing but damage to our reputation. Nothing but embarrassment and humiliation.
What's in the news? What's right. in the news?
Let's do it. Let's do it. So, Zim is going to introduce gold coins as the local currency has tumbled. This is unbelievable. I was reading a book about English history, and they once ransomed and kidnapped the French king during the reign of King Edward III. This is about the late 1300s. And when they ransomed and kidnapped the French king, in order to pay for his ransom, the French introduced a gold coin for the first time, a new gold sovereign, which they needed in order to prop up their failing economy. And that was in the 1300s in France. But here it is in 2022, happening right across our border. Zimbabwe's central bank said it would start selling gold coins this month as a store of value to tame runaway inflation, which has considerably weakened the local currency. The central bank governor said in a statement on Monday the coins will be available for sale from the 25th of July in local currency US dollars and other foreign currencies at a price based on the prevailing international price of gold. The Mosiwa Tunya coin, which has been named after the Victoria Falls, can be converted into cash or be traded locally and internationally. So Zimbabwe is going back to the prehistoric era of actually paying for things in gold. I wonder if it would be worth us going over the border to buy gold coins from them and bring them back to South Africa, whether we can just use them as a store of currency here. I wonder. Anyway, that's happening.
I shake my head at that.
It's embarrassing.
You know, anyway.
It's terrible. So there's another failure, is our northern neighbor. Just absolute disaster piled upon disaster in poor Zimbabwe. And this is why we've got so many Zimbabweans living in South Africa hoping to make a difference, hoping to be able to actually feed themselves, put themselves up in a house that doesn't leak, have water. Well, you've come to the wrong place, Zimbabweans, because we don't have electricity for you, I'm afraid. Anyway, speaking of that, Eskom on Tuesday said the conclusion of a new wage deal with workers did not mean load shedding would immediately come to an end. Oh, we were under the impression that after these wage negotiations were concluded, we'd have power again and things would work. Oh, the utility had for weeks blamed the rolling frequent power cuts on labor unrest. However, the relief South Africans have been hoping for will not come immediately. At a cost of 1 billion rand, Eskom has concluded a wage agreement with workers, which will see them earning 7% more, among other adjustments. Why? Somebody explain to me why we need to pay Eskom workers 7% more, when one of the reasons we have inflation One of the reasons things cost more, one of the reasons this economy is failing is because Eskom can't do its job. You know, personal accountability is kind of a big part of being alive and being human. And most of the bad things that happen to you are because of you. And in this country, it seems to me really unfair that we have to deal with that reality, but we also have to deal with the reality that most of the bad things that happen to us as a country are because of Eskom. And we didn't deserve that. That wasn't us. We didn't mismanage that place into the ground. Eskom's head of human resources, Elsie Poule, said that the agreement would help lift some of the pressure from the maintenance backlog, but the effects won't be immediate. It's going to take a lot to bring back some of the units, and we believe it'll contribute to stabilizing our operations. NUMSA's Irvin Jim, who this guy, I can't believe anyone takes him seriously, said the power crisis had nothing to do with workers. Huh. We think Eskom must take full responsibility. We understand that the public has been subjected to this. There's been load shedding before. Now, you know, Irvin, we would believe you if you hadn't lied on every other front before this. You don't seem to understand how economies work either.
They did get very uppity last week, the unions, about the wage negotiations and the wage deal. I don't know if you saw this, but Fariel Hafiji. And initially, yes, it was a story that was reported by EWN about the quantum, the average pay of Eskom workers.
They're the third, this was an third best place to work on average salaries in South Africa. Average salary of one of the 43,000 Eskom employees, the average salary inside of Eskom for those 43,000 employees is about 61,000 rand. Average.
So here's the thing, right? And this is where maths let down a lot of people when this conversation was being had, because there are different ways of working this out, right? You could work out average, or you could work out the mean, meaning which is not an average, but the quantum in various bands, and the highest band of people, which is what you actually need. So the kind of the large number of workers who are, you know, they are the boiler makers and the maintenance guys and the this and the this. And an average always gets distorted by what is the highest, what is the lowest, about the number and all of that. No, Matslet Twitter went insane. And Fariel was actually had to retract her statement and delete her tweet, because NUMSA went and their bots went apeshit on her.
So what? I always say, so what? If it happens in Twitter, that doesn't mean it's happening in the real world. I think that's weakness on the part of Fariel Hafiji. She shouldn't have withdrawn her tweet. And we shouldn't bow to pressure on social media from a bunch of people who can't do simple addition, subtraction, division, and multiplication. Outrageous. Anyway, listen to this. I have a friend who works at Eskom, Ex-Dom, says Yonder, and has not had a raise in 7 years. I'm not sure I would consider this across the board. So I'm conflicted about the increase if it's the first time across the board. Well, I'll tell you what. When people go and they investigate and they dig a little deeper here, we find all kinds of things. We found out that Andre de Rait is getting 5 million rand a year as his salary there for not fixing Eskom. Because people are saying, oh, no, but he's doing as good a job as it's possible to do. And, you know, there are people making excuses for him. They've apparently knocked 9 billion off of their debt, which is great. That's admirable. But the lights are still not on. So all I care about is the result. I'm not interested in your process or diversity and inclusion or the average salary or NUMSA. When I press the button on my wall, does the light come on? If it doesn't, I'm going to stop using your product and I'm going to get off the grid, which I'm doing at the moment. And I'm not going to use you anymore. And you're not going to get a single cent of my money. It's not just me, by the way. Lots of people will be doing this. And the ones who can't afford it will eventually just not have electricity because Eskom can't provide to them anymore. That's how it's going to go. The ANC necklaced their way into power, says G-Star, blah, blah, blah. Okay, it's we don't need to go down that path because that's not entirely true. The ANC won legitimately a number of elections, and the people of this country have voted for them substantially and in great numbers since. Those numbers have been declining, but you cannot say that they necklaced their way into power. That's just not true, G-Star. And you can get angry about it, and you can say things about the ANC, but we can't start lying about what actually happened in the past. Of course, there were people who were badly behaved in the ANC. There were people who were imprisoned. There were people who killed people, but there were people in all the parties that did that. And if we're going to start attributing blame to our past for our current scenario, then how far back do you go? And exactly where do you stop looking for excuses in the past and start looking for answers in the future? I don't believe that's helpful to us. Yeah, I agree on what you're saying, Gareth. Not sure how this was as yet. The high bands were overpaid, and not sure the middle and juniors were paid well enough as well. Well, you know, the problem in this country is also you get this incredible privilege that's afforded to people in upper management, and their demands are taken a lot more seriously because we believe that organizations wouldn't work without upper management, and that's largely true. But the middle and the lower end of every company, if those people aren't paid properly, nothing works. Do you agree, Pumi? We seem to give a free pass to the people on the top end of any organization. When they demand things, they get them. I don't know where that's gone.
The stacking up, right? The stacking up of who does more. This happens almost annually when various people want increases, or when people's performance bonuses get reported on. It happened about a month ago, also about a month ago with Neil Froneman, and which was not a performance bonus, but actually share options. Neil Froneman, Sibanye Gold, CEO of Sibanye Gold, Sibanye Stillwater, which is gold and platinum, actually, because they've been on a huge acquisitions drive in the platinum belt.
Right.
And his share options, past bonuses and performance bonuses, I think eventually came up to something like 300 million.
Well, he has taken Sibanye from a company that was a tiny single mine gold operation to a massive international platinum and gold operation with many mines all across the world, not just in South Africa. And he's the one who's taken the risk with his own money to make that happen. So, you know, you could argue this is a private company. There are shareholders. The shareholders approve these things. If the shareholders don't approve it, then that person doesn't get those bonuses. In his case.
And when that information was reported on, it was also at a time when Sibanye Stillwater was in a negotiation cycle with workers, I think, in their platinum businesses. And these wage negotiations, you know, are in cycles. It's you sign a wage agreement, even with the Eskom wage agreement, I think is for 3 to 5 years, which is why the number looks so big as well, because it includes the increases over the next couple of years. But
accountants and their magic. I'll show you how this should work. Congo Chris says, I'm going on strike until Gareth gives the comment section a 7% increase. 7% of zero is still zero, but it's the thought that counts.
You've got your 7%.
Seven percent is zero. Go for it. It's all yours. Now you're happy. So according to TP, Eskom is re-employing the previous employees that were let go. Yeah. Again, this is not how it works. There has to be consequence and there has to be accountability. If you went on strike and you cost the South African public huge amounts of money, you cost the economy, you cost some gogo her meat in her freezer, you know what? You don't get to shout and scream about your job and a 7% increase. In fact, there's a very good argument that you should be held in contempt of the country. You should be accused of treason for doing this to the people of South Africa. And maybe we should be arresting people on that basis. You work in a parastatal where there's emergency necessity.
Arresting people.
Imagine.
Gareth.
Imagine.
Arresting people. Imagine if people got arrested. What's that? There's a headline there. Something about the NPA and people being arrested.
Yeah, sure. Of course.
Following the state capture report.
Not a chance. We know all about that. We've spoken about that ad infinitum. We're blue in the face from talking about that. All right. But speaking of stuff in the news, we've got the Burning Platform coming up next, and we're going to be joined by one of our recurring champions, someone called Lieto Ntoba, who you know very well. He's a lecturer at the Central University of Technology. He's also a debater and a socio-political analyst. We love talking to Leto. He's got some interesting insights every single time we see him. So we'll be talking a little bit about some of the things that are going on in the news. And we want to hear from you. If there's something you would like us to address, please give us a shout. We want to hear about it. Pums, you wanted to say something before I brought that up?
I wanted to say about arrests, right? I have seen quite a, is it worrying? I think it should be. Worrying trend over the last couple of weeks. There have been a number of people, including Hamilton Ndlovu, who've been found guilty of the PPE fraud, tender fraud. And instead of being arrested and going to prison, which I think almost everybody would rather prefer, he's being asked to pay back their money. So I want him to pay back the money and go to prison.
Yes, I think like, both. Yeah, both.
Do people not go to prison anymore?
Absolutely, so both.
And I think I saw three cases in the past 2 weeks of people who are expected to pay back the money. In fact, I think in the Sunday Times 2 weeks ago, somebody else was asked to pay back the money. And he's just going, I don't have the money. I'm going, so why isn't he in prison? I want the money back and I want him in prison.
Yeah, I agree with you. Both.
That's what I want. Yeah. Isn't that what?
Absolutely. A lot of people talking about Paul O'Sullivan, and he's got a new book out. So we'll see if we can't get him on at some point in the future on the Burning Platform. But we've got lots of people lined up. I promise you, the producers are working day and night to try and find us the best guests for the Burning Platform. And we will be joined by one such guest in just a little bit. Stick around, cliffcentral.com. It is Thursday morning. Pumi Mashiko is here, Gareth Cliff, and you, most importantly, as a part of what makes our Thursdays a more serious day, a day where we take things a little more seriously, but we're not serious people all the time, as you've heard if you've listened to the show for more than 5 minutes. All of that and more on the way next. CliffCentral.com.